Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today, I've got Shania Twain. I sat down with the country superstar while she was in Los Angeles promoting her new movie, I Still Believe. Twain opened up about almost losing her voice because of Lyme disease, her battle with music executives early in her career, and why she wants to work with, get ready for this, Post Malone. I'll have that and a whole lot more after the break. Stick around. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's Shania Twain. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
I'm so excited to be sitting down with you. I think the last time I really saw you in person was Staples Center. Yeah, my husband and I went to see you at Staples.
When, like, how many years ago was that?
I think it was right when I started Variety, actually. It was right when I started Variety, so about 2 years ago. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing great. I feel great. It's sunny and life is good.
Do you like LA?
I love LA. Yeah. I really do.
What do you love about it?
I love the food. As a vegetarian, it can be
Are you vegetarian?
I'm not vegan.
Vegan. Okay.
But, you know, it's difficult when you're on the road a lot and you're traveling a lot and you're already limited to a small portion of most places,
right.
Menus, right? So LA is one of those places where even if it's not a vegetarian restaurant, you'll have a lot of options. So I just love that freedom and good quality too. I mean, people really take their food seriously
When did you go vegetarian?
I've been a vegetarian for, like, I guess, 27 years.
Wow.
Even more.
Yeah. And now are you good at making vegetarian dishes?
I'm pretty good, yeah.
Yeah?
Ha, ha, ha. Does that sound like I'm bragging?
I asked.
Well, I love cooking. I love being in the kitchen. That's my favorite room in the house, the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got pretty good at making things that were pleasing to even non-vegetarians, right?
That's the tough thing.
And so I think it challenges you to be a better cook, a better food, you know, just better with food.
So let's talk about I Still Believe. How did you get involved?
I was invited, and I think it was, I had done a last minute role playing John Travolta's girlfriend in Trading Paint, and directors just talked to each other and I was asked by the directors, the Irvin Brothers, if I was interested in doing this.
Because this is like your second
act,
like after the John Travolta movie,
That's it. I mean, I had done an actual acting role on Broad City in New York. And
which was genius.
It really is genius. And it was such a great experience. I was playing Shania Twain, but a very extrovert one. And maybe that was a really good introduction in some sense to acting, because it's like, wow, you can really get away with a lot when you're not, you know, being really, when you're stepping out of yourself.
Right.
So, and then if you take on a role that is not even associated to you, you really are stepping out of yourself. And I like that element of it. I like that you can still, you can be creative within it, but it's collaborative. I like collaborative environments if I'm with nice people. And the spirit of this particular movie, I Still Believe, is so magnetic that it was an instant I'd be honored to, you know, be a part of telling this beautiful story.
So tell us the story.
Well, Jeremy Camp is a singer-songwriter, a Christian artist, very successful one. And it's a real life story. Mm. He falls in love with a girl that has terminal cancer.
In college, they fall in love.
In college, they're young.
Yeah.
They're just, early college age, right?
Yep.
So, knowing that she's going to die, they marry. They just do not let anything stand in their way of being together and showing unconditional love. They didn't shy away from it. Mm-hmm. No fear did not get in the way of love.
Right.
In this case. And I learned a lot from it just from the standpoint of human nature and how could somebody so young, two people so young, dive so deep into such an unconditional state of emotion. And so the story is just really about that ultimate unconditional love.
And you play Jeremy's mom.
And I play Jeremy's mom. And of course, would have been heartbreaking for the mother, for Terry Camp, to see her son walking into the biggest heartbreak of his life.
Right.
That what would be the biggest heartbreak of his life. How do you stand there and watch that? Without trying to change their mind, maybe, or something.
Because most people would, I mean, the truth is most people would walk away.
Mm-hmm. And yes, most, well, I mean, I don't know.
It's such a unique
position. It's a difficult
position,
thing, right? You don't really know what would you do in that same situation. But all you can do when you are witnessing that situation is admire it, right? Mm-hmm. And be inspired. And I think that the parents also felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the mother of Jeremy, Terry, thought, this is what I was imagining and feeling, you know, just you can't stand in his way, and supporting him is the best way to help him.
Mm. And it's a movie about a singer. So didn't you want to sing in the movie?
Well, I related. I loved the fact that, I love the fact that it was music associated, because I do think that, I believe very strongly that music is, you know, one of our best communicators of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we don't know what to say, we put on a song that says it for us, or when we're not even sure what we're feeling, we put on music and instinctively we choose things that bring it out of us.
Right.
You know, bring it out of us. So, of course, I related very well to the way Jeremy had used music and had written music that was helping him express.
Now, had people come to you before earlier for acting? I would think they would.
I've been handed many scripts. Mm-hmm. And it was always a revisiting question. Do you want to, are you sure you don't want to try acting? And it wasn't that I didn't want to, but I was just busy doing music.
Right.
I wear a lot of hats in my musical career. I'm involved with the art direction, the styling. I write. I'm really much very big into writing my own treatments, writing the direction of my shows, and it's just
too much.
Too much. Just no time to take on a new adventure of. Something that would demand my time, and I would want to be good at it, right? I wouldn't want to be casual about
it.
So, but now, I'm a mom, and I'm just busy. I'm a busy lady. So now, I have more time. I have my voice back. Because that was another journey that was taking a lot of my time.
That a lot of people didn't know about.
Recovering, right. So now I'm in really a good place where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to learn something new and to take on something new and to explore this avenue that is turning out to be so fun. Mm. And somewhere I feel very comfortable and natural in.
What was it like acting opposite John Travolta?
And I was his girlfriend.
You were John Travolta's girlfriend. Go ahead.
So there was romance involved, and well, he's such a wonderful guy anyway. He's so sweet and kind, and he was very nurturing about it. And I did say to him, I'm like, you know, I've never played a character in my life. So right. I don't know how it's going to go. This is a completely new experience. And he's like, don't worry, I got you. And he really did. He's just a really good, he's a good friend. Mm. And he's sincere, and that put me at ease.
But it has to be surreal when the director calls action and you're like, this is the guy from Saturday Night Fever. This is the guy from Grease. It has to be a moment where you're just like, what's going on?
It's interesting because this is what I discovered about acting, or that the way I would feel about it, and in the moment, is that I just turn off all of those other things. I'm just not distracted, which surprised me. I thought I would be very distracted, and then I would be nervous, and that I would be preoccupied with things like what you just said. You know, like who am I standing across from? But no, I was in the moment, in the character, in the other actors' characters, and just, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything else to be, and I don't know how I was able to do that so easily, but it's like a switch.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you getting your voice back.
Yeah.
People didn't know it was Lyme disease. Yes.
Right. So of course, I say of course just because it seemed really obvious in the moment when I lost my voice. First, I lost more, it was more like volume. You know, I couldn't project. Couldn't call out for the dog. Didn't, you know, couldn't really, I wasn't really heard very well on the phone. Couldn't speak in loud environments, atmospheres. And I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm just coming off this tour. It was the Up tour. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired. I'm a new mom, and I'm, you know, the tour was long and demanding. I'm a wife. I'm a songwriter. I'm all of these things. I'm jet lagged. But it never came. So month after month, I'm like, okay, what is going on? I still don't have the projection. I thought, okay, well, this is something more permanent, something more serious. No voice doctor could explain it. They were like, okay, it's probably psychological. Mm. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, well, I would buy that if it was just like a fatigue, it's like, you know, right. Related to fatigue. But I mean,
but it's just your voice that
I'm recovered now. Like I'm rested now. Why is this not coming back? I didn't buy it, and I was sure it was some sort of physiological thing, but it wasn't my vocal cords, apparently not my vocal cords. So, okay, now that I've looked at my vocal cords probably 10 times over years of trying to figure out what is wrong, hoping another specialist would see something else, one specialist says, I want you to be checked by my neurologist. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I mean, I don't know what that would have to do with my voice, but sure. So they do a very uncomfortable test and put 5 needles into your larynx. And then you have to phonate. Yes, it's terrible. I don't want to say it's terrible in case anybody ever has to get it done. It's worth getting it done. You've got to do it. So these needles register the nerve response while you're speaking, while you're phonating. And it just tells you exactly how your nerves are responding. And you have one nerve to each vocal cord. And both my vocal cords were weak. Mm. Not the vocal cords, the nerves. both nerves were damaged. Okay, so now we understand why I'm getting this flanging effect and why I wasn't getting projection, because the air is escaping.
Right.
So it's sort of like trying to speak with a straw in your mouth.
Mm.
Air is escaping and you just can't connect the pressure that you need in order to project. So what to do? The specialist, Dr. Zadaloff, says, well, I'm an opera singer and I've had to have this surgery as well.
Wait, your doctor said he was an opera singer?
That's right. The surgeon.
The surgeon.
Okay, yeah, he's a neck, head, cancer surgeon specialist, okay?
/ opera singer.
But he's an opera singer, so he is very involved with the classical community in Philadelphia. So he says, he had cancer surgery.
Mm.
I don't remember whether it was the thyroid, something thyroid. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he had to have the surgery for the cancer, and it damaged the nerves to his vocal cords, which is unfortunately a very common mishap in any neck surgery. Neck surgery.
Right.
Not, you know, the vocal cord.
Mode typical. Surgery. Yep. Yeah.
And so he says, I've had it done and I can tell you all about it through experience, by way of experience. And what they do is they put little Gore-Tex crutches, on either side of your larynx to make up for the weakness in your nerves, in the nerves. And it just works. So now when I'm laughing, I'm the loudest one in the room. You know, things like that.
Right.
And I can belt it out now. And my voice is different. And I do have to still navigate.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'll take it. Right. You know, I'm just so grateful to be able to sing again and enjoy my voice, enjoy vocal expression of any kind.
Was there ever a time where you thought, I'm never going to get it back?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Because I went through 7 years.
How do you get through that?
I was very sad about it. I was grieving. It's a genuine grief. I felt like I'd lost one of my limbs. I felt like you know what it felt, you know, what it felt like was, you know, when you, have you ever had a nightmare where you're screaming and nobody can hear you?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it felt like all those years. Like nobody can hear me. I can't get it out and I can't get it out in the way that I want to get it out.
So what was it like getting back on that stage? And obviously, you know, it would take time. You probably had to do a lot of therapy, physical, vocal therapy. But what was it like getting on the stage to perform for the first time after all of this?
Well, before I had the surgery, I opted for, which was very, of course, it was conservative but wise, by my doctor. Dr. Zadaloff said, first try, let's try, exercises, just voice therapy, and physical therapy, all kinds of things. I've done so many therapies. Okay, I know a lot about the voice therapies now. Like the head and neck therapies, right, and laryngeal therapies, speech therapy, all of that. And it brought me a long way, but it was with so much effort that by the time I was able to perform live on stage, I could only get my warm up down to 2 hours. So now I've got 2 hours of warm up and I've got an hour and a half of performance. How can I maintain this level of energy?
Right.
And I'm only getting older. So I go back to Dr. Zadaloff and I say, I'm achieving a lot right now, but is exhausting me, and physically. And he says, and you know what? You're only getting older. So he said, this fatigue that you're feeling now and like all of the musculature that you're trying to maintain is only going to get more lax and slack,
right?
Which is our problem, you know, with voices. And he's like, okay, so the next step would be to support that. And this is what I suggest. And it's just, and so anyway, then there was, so then there's another recovery, which is after the operation. Right. And then I had to have a second one because there was a soft tissue problem after the first one. Oh my gosh. Anyway, nightmare. So months after to really be able to, I still have scars there, which I kind of like them. They remind me of where I've been and where right. I've, you know,
because if you've come through that, that's. Mm-hmm. You can't even describe it for someone to feel. Yeah, it's sort of what you said, like you have to describe it like having a nightmare and no one's hearing you.
Right, and I couldn't live that way.
Right.
I'm like, sure, listen, if you've been through it, yourself as the surgeon, you're a singer, this is as close as I'm going to get to somebody who understands
right.
what's happening and what I got to do about it. And the reality of whether it would work or not, and you know, just facing that. But speaking right. to somebody that understood it, I'm like, no, well, it's better than the alternative because right. I'm, you know, I'm never going to be able to sustain this, and that means I'm going to have to stop my career.
Now we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Twain details her battles with music producers early in her career and what happened when they told her she was too sexy and too, quote unquote, male threatening. Plus, wait till you hear what a fan she is of Post Malone. It's all coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's more of my sit-down with Shania Twain. Okay, so who would you love to work with right now that would surprise me?
Oh, boy, I have a long list of people that would surprise you. Well, I want to work with Post Malone.
Ding. What do you want to do with Post Malone and why Post Malone?
Okay, so I'm in this really, really neat phase of getting reunited with my fans from 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, could be 25 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, right around all of these like triple diamond long period of, you know, momentum.
Yep.
And a huge number of my fans then were little kids, like 2, 3, 6 years old. And they're now grown up. And there are people like, you know, there's a lot of celebrities that are now grown up that were the little kid fans.
Right.
Post Malone is one of them.
Wait, so how did you find this out? How did this happen?
Well, they just say it. And it's the coolest thing. It's just so organic. Like, you know, somebody, the first way I heard about Post Malone was he was on Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Fallon says, you know, so what does Post Malone do backstage waiting to go on for a show? And I think that particular show was, I think it was Coachella mm-hmm. or on his tour, right, okay, right. Like something big, right? And is backstage and he goes, well, when I'm backstage waiting to go on for a show, I don't know, I hang out with Shania Twain. And I had seen him backstage, and it was just a really fun, cool moment, but I didn't realize that it stuck with him and that it mattered. And then in another interview later on down the line, he then says, oh, yeah, you know, I would always listen to Shania Twain in the car. You know what? In the car seat. Like, yeah. In the car, you know, my mom driving and Shania Twain just playing on repeat type of thing. So it's the story of a lot of artists now in their 20s that are reflecting and we're like reunited. And because now I'm like working again. Now that I've got my voice again,
right.
I'm working again. And it's like, wow, it's not like starting over, but it's like being reunited with where I left off. And they make it all very feel very real and tangible.
Right.
Because they're, I mean, I wouldn't, it's just really funny because I look into my audiences and I go, okay, where are all these people in their 20s coming from? Because I was expecting when I went back on tour for the audience to be my age, you
right,
know?
Right.
And so many of them are in their 20s. So, you know, Harry Styles and the Jonas Brothers and just, I mean, it's crazy how many of them there are, and they're really, really fun to talk to because they all have the similar story. And when I talk to the audience, it's the same thing.
Right.
It'll be, you know, a bunch of little girls, you know, girls that were just little kids at right. a sleepover or something listening to Shania Twain, and now they're 25. So, and they're still coming together to the shows.
So when are you getting in the studio with Post Malone?
Right, exactly. So I'm organizing that. I'm on to him. And yeah, no, that's just really wonderful. And you know, when I first met Post Malone, he was warming up for Justin Bieber, and he had only had like about 15 or 20 minutes on stage, and he wasn't
wow.
so he didn't have much time up there yet. And I loved his voice, I loved his whole way, and I went to the Bieber show to see Post Malone, and I was able to get backstage because my people know Bieber's people.
Because also you're Shania Twain.
And okay, yeah. Okay, no, that's true. So I'm like, okay, I love Justin Bieber, but I could see Justin Bieber, you know, anywhere. He's always touring.
Right.
I had actually already seen him live, and I was there to see Post Malone. So I'm waiting side stage for Post Malone to get off. And his guy pulls him over and says, hey, Post, Shania Twain would like to meet you. Can she get a picture with you? And he's like, okay, sure. Like, she wants to meet me. And I'm thinking, how does he even know who I am? I didn't think he was even going to know
you're
who I was.
Yourself,
but I
sure.
needed to get a... I need, no, but why would... Like, that's unlikely. So I'm taking us back full circle to unlikely. So how in the world, why would I imagine that this, you know, the coolest dude ever and brilliant, like current lyricist, trend-setting mm-hmm. guy in his 20s know who Shania Twain was? And he was like all excited and totally knew who I was. And of course, then I realized later that he knows all my songs.
So have you been inspired to get some face tattoos?
No. But listen, so my backstage photo with him, the minute he walks off stage, he doesn't have those tattoos yet.
Wow.
So the photo is so, it's so cool to have this photo. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I think he's just got one little fine one. The fine bob-wired one that you can barely see in the photo, right? And yeah. So this was our first meet, and I think we're just destined to jam and just creatively get together. We, you know, I don't know. I think we just have connections. But isn't that like
That's
a surprise,
amazing.
Right?
So Dixie Chicks. Take back. You did, you performed, well, not with them, but the Super Bowl, same yeah. Super Bowl.
Yeah.
How excited are you to see that the Dixie Chicks are back, can be back?
Oh, gosh. I was devastated that they were gone. Or that they'd been kicked out is a better word, probably, mm-hmm. right? I was so sad about it. I was, I'm a huge fan. They're extremely talented, and I missed hearing their music. I love them as people. I go see them live, and I've always just had only respect.
Do you think country music, we talk about this a lot in the office actually, about country music, is it opening up where, you know, like a Dixie Chicks scenario, could that happen again today? Or Lil Nas, right, who's being accepted by the country music community, you know, a few years ago, would that happen?
Well, I mean, I'm all for inclusion. I really get uncomfortable in any scenario where there is, you know, any kind of rejection and judgment of something just that's maybe different.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me very uncomfortable and uneasy. So I feel great about this period that we're in, right, and that it's just not acceptable to be, you know, it's just not acceptable to be prejudiced and mm-hmm. judgmental, and hurtful.
Mm.
It's not cool to be hurtful.
Mm.
And so I just love this. I love that we are thinking with broader minds, that we have a more accepting spirit. And besides, I don't really want to be in a world of art that is closed-minded.
Mm.
There's no place for that. I mean, this is what, there's it's no art. Right or wrong. To
right.
There's no right or wrong to art.
Right.
Like, how can that be? You
know? So it's changed a lot since the 90s.
It's changed a lot. I had to have big shoulders during that time, for sure.
Why do you say that?
Well, I was, you know, in the 90s, I was just coming into, I was a late bloomer, so I was just coming into starting to feel, I mean, this, I don't mean this in a corny way, but I was just starting to feel like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I had spent, for example, all of my high school years, I would go to school in boys' clothes, loose clothes, oversized, you know, hockey jerseys and loose track pants and stuff like that. I didn't feel comfortable wearing things that flattered my new curves.
Mm.
And I was always very sporty. I was very tomboyish as a child. And when I started to fill in, I was bashful about it and insecure about it. So I hid that. I wasn't proud of it. I was shy of it. But when I got this opportunity to make a video, all of a sudden, I felt like I can step out of myself a little bit and explore a different kind of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gone through a phase of performance after my parents died that took me way out of my comfort zone. All of a sudden, now I'm on stage wearing high heel shoes, sequin gowns, you know, flattering, sexy costumes in this show, and I'm just one of the lead singers, one of the four lead singers, and I did this as a job,
right?
Because I was not that kind of singer. I was a, you know, country rock, pop, folk, freestyle, barefoot on stage singer. So I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I was working with real dancers who literally had to teach me how to walk in high heels. Because I couldn't do that and sing at the same time. I'm like, guys, you know, I had to walk up and down stairs in high heels in a dress that weighed 25 pounds, you know, sequin beaded dress. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, and I had to wear makeup and lipstick and all. I'm just, it was very glam. And so I didn't really like, having to do it as a job, but I learned so much from it that by the time it was time to make my first video, I'm like, oh, I can do that. I can experiment with this. And I think it's actually quite cool to have curves. See what I'm saying? So I'm like discovering that it's quite fun. So here's me with my lovely free-spirited self of thinking I'm enjoying being a woman and being curvy. And I think that it's wonderful to flatter what you have. And then, the country music industry was not ready for that. And so everyone around me was like, I don't think that that's going to work. No bra, open midriff. Your lyrics are really very dominating. And they didn't use the word empowering because that's not the way they didn't see it as female empowering. They saw it more as a threat. That's what was it. They used the word threat.
Was it mostly men who were telling you this?
Everyone.
Wow.
Everyone was telling me. Sorry. No, everyone was telling me, you are threatening. This is very male threatening. And so this is what they were telling me. The lyrics are male threatening. And the braless, midriff, sort of more free feminine spirit was going to threaten the women. And I said, all right, my intentions are pure, and what I sing about and how I portray myself is who I am. And I believe that both men and women will sense that and feel that. And I just,
it's ice.
So I just pushed through and I said, I have to do it this way. And I'm a proud woman. I like being a woman. I'm sure they like being a woman too. Like, we're in this together. And that was the attitude.
I feel like you're going to start singing in a second. No,
that was the spirit of the music.
Right.
So the music and the visuals belonged together. And they had to go together. So I was criticized for it, of course. And I think it was really more, it was just a little bit scary and new. And there was a lot of unknown to it. And I think that people thought I was going to get rejected by the public is what the great fear was. And so why invest in this artist if, they thought it was self-destructive?
And here you are now.
Here I am now.
Look at you now.
I'm so wrong. I felt instinctively that I needed to follow my true self.
Shania Twain, this was awesome. That was Shania Twain. Her new movie, I Still Believe, is in theaters on March 13th. Now, coming up next week, Logan Lerman. The actor stars opposite Al Pacino in Amazon's Hunters. Find out what he has to say about his first day working with the legendary actor. Plus, he weighs in on some of the controversy surrounding the series. Thanks for listening to The Big Ticket. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mark Malkin and check Variety.com for all the latest breaking Hollywood news. See you next time.